sorry. I just can't stop crying.
Well, it won't be for much longer, will it?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 12, The Doctor Who Rocks the Cradle in the Conservatory with the Candlestick. Now, here are your hosts, Tari Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to a whole new month of podcasts, including on our Patreon, episode 33 of Again With This, which is dropping February 5th. Let's read Shannon Doherty's YM cover story. La Shannon was the cover girl for YM's August 1992 issue. It's too long for me to read the whole thing like we did with the Andrew Shue 17 piece, which was a smooth one page long, not even. There was very generous margins. But once again, I will bring you highlights from the rest of the issue. We will discuss the profile, and there will be visual aids. They are wonderful. So look out for that. Those will be exclusive to our Patreons. So join them / us at patreon.com/againwiththis to enjoy all of that. Are we ready to discuss The Doctor Who Rocks the Cradle?
I suppose.
All right. Let us begin with our D-plot. Fittingly enough, D&D, business intrigue intensifies. At a meeting improbably held on Black Friday, just a reminder, the last episode was Thanksgiving, and this is the next day. So yes, it's Black Friday, and yes, everyone's at work. Come on, guys.
I did not put that together at all. Nicely done.
Thank you. Amanda hands out a bunch of assignments, including giving at least one of Allison's accounts to someone else, and then has Billy hang back so she can tell him she's taking on extra work, but not why. And she's going to need a right-hand man she can count on, and obviously Allison's not going to be it, since Allison's not there for reasons we will get to in our C-plot, but if you heard our last episode, you can probably guess. Billy does not agree to anything, but he seems receptive. And then later, Allison and Peter are at her place getting ready for bed. She moans about how tired she is, and he says he hopes she's not too tired, holding up a black lace teddy, and they say this, clip two.
Where do you get the energy?
Same place as you, on the job. Power's the breakfast of champions.
Unfortunately, my power is still waiting in the wings.
Okay, thanks to you, Sarah, in one of the last recent episodes, now all I can hear is their mixed metaphors.
Like, yeah.
Just in this exchange, power is a breakfast that is also an actor in the wings. Guys.
Yeah. I don't. I mean, yeah. And it's particularly bad with him. I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, not that the writing is ever, you know, Shakespearean the rest of the time, but yeah, I don't. I guess they just assume Jack Wagner can handle it because he's been on soap since God was a child. So,
sure.
And they're not wrong. But once you start thinking about it, it's really like, was that four or five different symbology systems? I lost track.
Right. It's really true. Anyway, Amanda supposes the D&D takeover is imminent, but Peter warns her not to get complacent. She needs to start watching Bruce closely. And report back on changes in his behavior. He is desperate and will take all possible steps to take his company, not necessarily telling Amanda about them. Amanda doesn't think that's true and segues to fucking. And the next day, Amanda goes to see Bruce at home, commenting that he looks good. Spending time there was obviously the right move. He confirms that things are on the upswing. He has a handshake deal to merge with another agency, Banfield and Lee, which will make them the biggest advertising firm in Southern California. And Amanda purrs that it sounds too good to be true. He appreciates all her work during this time, and he'll do her best to get his best to get her a big raise. She thanks him and then immediately says she has to go, like, so suspicious. She drove all the way over there and was like, bye. Which
yeah.
is very funny.
Little surprised she didn't ask to use his phone. And also, Bruce.
Yeah.
Like, buddy.
Put it together.
Yeah.
I mean, which he's about to, but in her car, she calls Peter, and you can see in the visual aids her sitting in her Porsche, like right out front on the car phone, which has a cord. Adorable. My mom had that phone. Some number of days later, Amanda storms into Bruce's office where he despondently tells her that the other agency pulled out of the merger because rumors of the deal drove stock prices up, making the purchase of D&D too expensive for them. And Amanda's sorry. So that's it. Someone leaked the information and the deal fell apart. And Amanda asks what Bruce is going to do. Bruce? Clip three.
They say the most dangerous enemy isn't the person sneaking up behind you, but rather the one standing right in front of you.
I don't understand your meaning.
It took me a while to believe it, but it makes perfect sense, really. Only three people at Banfield and Lee knew about the deal. Now, I certainly didn't want to jeopardize the deal, and they claim they didn't either. So, aside from me, only one other trusted person knew.
You are way off base here. I would never jeopardize...
What I still don't understand is why. Why? Why would you do such a thing?
Bruce, you have got to listen to me.
No, actually, I don't. You're fired, Amanda. I hope I never have to see your traitorous face again as long as I live.
Well, bad news, buddy.
I hate you both. Never talk to me again. Okay, first of all, Bruce, they do not say that. Okay, like there's a lot of cliches that you could use. That one doesn't exist. Second of all, whoever wrote this dialogue, like, why bring up the three people at Banfield and Lee?
Right.
They're by giving Amanda cover to be like, well, maybe, like, you don't know them. And third of all, Locklear, it's not like her to just cut herself off in the middle of her own line and wait for him to jump it. But it was very obvious there. And it's like, guys, you should have taken that again. But
yeah,
okay. For such a climactic scene, it was not great. Should have been better.
True, but again, we are only in the D plot. There's much drama to come.
True.
And by the way, that's not the only time where it's very obvious that another take was warranted and did not happen, but we'll get to it.
Yeah, that's true.
On to the C plot. Will Allison's drunk driving arrest scare her straight? It truly is a mark of how busy season three is that Allison, spoiler, getting arrested for drunk driving. Well, I guess it's not a spoiler because I said it in the headline, but it's the C plot. It's the C plot of this episode. Like, it's really very, very packed, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, and like whole episodes go by where you don't see a member of credits cast
right
at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Michael's not in this one at all.
Yeah, like what? Anyway.
Right. So, when we pick back up with good old Allison, she is still at the scene of her collision with the cyclist as he's loaded onto a gurney and into an ambulance. He is alive. And the cop checks again that she is okay and then tells her the kid doesn't seem to have any broken bones, fortunately. And then she starts gasping self-justifications about his having come out of nowhere and so forth, and there was nowhere she could have stopped, babbling so fast that the cop starts trying to soothe her because even though she endangered a teenager's life, she's still a white woman and is really acting like one. Then he tells her she needs to take a sobriety test, a request she apparently finds outlandish. Clip four.
Sobriety test? I don't understand.
You don't? Because you're not that drunk. It was just a funny moment to me that, like, first of all, Courtney Thorne-Smith has it cranked to 11 with the wide eyes and the, like, anxious hyperventilating.
Yeah.
But, like, there are moments in this performance with drunk Allison where she is doing this, like, manipulative addict thing.
Yeah.
But you're not entirely sure that was the direction. I think she's just doing it. But what lands weird here is that she's not doing it here. Like,
yeah.
She really seems to be like, what do you mean a sobriety test? Like, bitch, are you kidding?
Right.
You're weaving all over the road. Like you, I mean, you have to know on some level that you are not sober.
Right. Also that would be the first thing that a police officer on the scene of a collision with a car and a cyclist would do, like regardless of how she was acting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway.
But what the previous line is actually, he says, we're going to give you a breathalyzer. And she says, a sobriety test. So I also wonder if that was like dialogue explaining what a breathalyzer is, the way it's like, we're going to give you a polygraph, a lie detector. You know what I mean? Like how that sometimes happens. Like people know what a breathalyzer is.
No, polygraph cola.
Right. Anyway. So she blows, immediately gets booked for being over the legal limit. Turns out there are worse fates than having dinner with Billy and Susan, and this is it. So we next see Allison in jail being roughly led to a payphone for her one call, which is to Billy. She fudges that she got into an accident, but eventually tells him where she is. And while they're talking, by the way, I didn't notice this when I was actually watching it, but when I went to do the visual aids, Susan's trying to kiss on Billy while he's on the phone until he shoves her away by her forehead.
Oh, my God, really?
Yes, there's a gif in the visual aids. It's
this fucking guy.
It's a very weird choice. I mean, it was kind of funny, but still, it's like this, as I tweeted last night, like, this is the cutie all the teen girls had a crush on, Mr. Face Shove guy? Okay. No,
but also, Susan, he's on the phone.
True. That is irritating. Allison also adds, just for for anyone who's writing a book, that she did try to call Zach first, but he's not home. And as Susan sits by looking disgusted, I mean, somewhat warrantedly.
Yeah, fair.
Even if she hadn't been shoved by the face, disgust wouldn't be out of line under the circumstances. Yeah. Allison asks Billy to bail her out and promises to pay him back, and he agrees. So then we see him bringing her back home after dark. She's bitching about her experience in lockup as though they are friends and not like the last time they were together before this. She basically told him and his girlfriend to go fuck themselves, which she did. So Billy tries and fails to care about her ordeal. Clip 5.
Yeah, sounds like a nightmare.
This is the best line delivery she was ever had.
It truly is.
I am not a crackpot. It was no. Really good. Like, yeah, sounds like a nightmare. It's like every now and then the broken actor is right for the line delivery. Oh, God. I mean, his facial choices, you'll see it in visual aids, but like his facial choices in the storyline are not well matched to the material.
True.
But that line delivery almost makes up for it.
Yeah. And I feel like we give him credit when those moments happen because they are so rare, because it's just like, hey, he did one. Good job, buddy.
Yeah. I also love that she's complaining that jail is like kind of grossy.
Yeah.
Like this is, you know, oh, that's a really well-kept secret. The jail's gross.
Right. Yeah.
That's why it's called jail and not the spa.
Yeah. Like one of the things she says is like, it was filthy. Like, you don't say. I'm shocked.
Oh, a word.
they didn't have turndown service. Wow.
Mint.
Anyway, she mumbles that she just wants to take a shower and then goes for the vodka on top of the fridge. First of all, like, I feel like we must have talked about this before. Doesn't vodka go in the freezer? Isn't that where people keep vodka? I thought.
Yeah.
Okay. Not in this show.
It's where I keep it.
Furthermore, not to say it would be credible that after you hit a kid driving your car drunk, it would immediately like be the wake up call that makes you stop drinking completely, because I understand that's not how addiction works. I do think she would be a little more furtive about it and wait for the guy who bailed her out of her drunk driving arrest to leave the premises before pouring herself a drink.
Yeah. And I feel like the writers knew that, but there was like whatever emotional exposition they had to get done, and given that some of it has to be done by Billy, that they're like, all right, fine, we're just gonna have the vodka out and we're gonna do this. But yeah, I really feel like you would at least wait to, like, you would hear him go upstairs and then be like very silently like scring open the bottle and just drink directly from it, because I'm a professional.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess we've also seen her like drinking in secret or by herself enough that like we get it. But I, right. you know, like this is kind of a big life moment. I just think she would be a bit more circumspect about it. But
unless
you're right.
unless they're trying to communicate that she's so far gone that she doesn't even care what yeah. he thinks. But I don't. It's hard to say.
True. And as we've also said, like, this is only the C plot. Like, we've still got two more plots to get through. Like, they just got to churn it.
Mm-hmm. True.
Whatever. Billy calls her on this. But when she says she needs a drink now more than ever, he's like, whatever. Starts to leave. But she stops him and asks if he'll spend the night. Bitch, you were reading him for filth last night. Also earlier in this scene. Like, call your so-called boyfriend. But he just says he and Susan have plans and suggests that Allison could use the alone time. And she angrily shoots back that what she could use is someone to appreciate what she is going through. And he's like, I posted bail, remember? Which he did. Like,
yeah,
true.
He did.
She says that's not caring. It's writing a check. But don't mind her. She just spent the night in jail. And Billy replies that a kid just spent the night in the hospital. And maybe she should think about how he is. Another excellent point.
Yeah.
Like, when Billy's right, he's right. It's the worst, yeah. but he was up and down through the scene. Great job.
Yep. And I mean, the line delivery on that was pretty good, too, that he was just exhausted by her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This also reads like someone enforcing healthy boundaries with an addict, too. Like, he's just not engaging. Like, she keeps trying to pick a fight, and he's like, nope, gotta go.
Yep.
Anyway, Amanda comes by the next day to see what's up with Allison ignoring her calls. Allison vaguely says some pretty terrible things have happened. Not at all suspicious about how friendly Amanda is being, especially when she chirps that Allison will have tons of free time now that she's put some other guy on the Linden account. But Allison is, in fact, horrified to learn that Amanda's pulled her off her primary account. And Amanda shrugs that Allison wasn't at work again, and she doesn't want to hear another excuse about it. And apparently, Allison spends the whole day not thinking about how to save her job, but rather how to get Billy down to Shooters so she can tell him this. Clip six.
Oh, God. I made a mistake. I never should have let you go.
Isn't this a little late for this?
Doesn't have to be.
I don't get it. But all of a sudden you have some kind of epiphany? Was this because of the accident?
In a way. Yes, I've been doing nothing but thinking for the past few days. And I've come to the conclusion that I need you.
Really? For what?
Before, when you asked me to stop drinking, I did. I stopped because you told me to. Don't you understand? You're the only good thing that's ever happened to me. I was too stupid to see it then. I see it now.
Look, I'm glad to help you in any way I can. But we can't get back together if that's what you're suggesting.
I'm not suggesting it. Billy, we belong together. And I'm sure that deep inside you know it too.
I mean, the best part of that whole exchange is when even Billy is like, it's Billy about himself. What do you need me for?
He totally is. I feel like the writers need reminding that it's Billy because, mm-hmm. I mean, we don't see this here, but it does come up again. He broke it off with her.
Yeah. Why must we keep reminding you how things actually ended?
Yeah, it actually wasn't. It does seem like a very long time ago. It wasn't actually that long ago.
No.
This was well written in terms of her sort of desperate, like emotional using.
Mm-hmm.
Like from the addict, I thought that was good. Like there are some true things in this performance, in this storyline.
Yeah.
But then Billy is involved. It's just like, what? Really? Like, it's, you know, it's like, this is really a searing portrait of blah, blah, blah. And then it's like popsicle stick puppets. Like, all right, guys. Anyway.
Yeah. It does seem like she tried to do some research, like in as much as she had time to like find some emotional truth and like jam it in where she was able, given the very inconsistent writing, let's say.
Yes. And the fact that it is Billy.
That too. But anyway, he asks about Zach. And Allison says she realized that he can never be there for her like Billy was, which is odd because the two of them were exchanging I love yous in the last episode. Mm-hmm. But Billy says he can't be with Allison because he's in love with Susan. And Allison gets bitter at this. And then Billy asks what she's drinking. She claims it's soda and storms off, I guess, before he can sniff it. And the next morning, Zach shows up proudly saying he got her car fixed. She's cold, and he says he panicked, vaguely saying he had something similar happen in the past, so he has also had one or more DUIs, I guess. She needed someone to be there for her, and it hurt her when he wasn't. But he says it won't happen again. He kisses her, and that's all it takes. She melts. And then he says he's just in time to drive her to court, where the prosecutor tells the judge Allison's never been in legal trouble before and has agreed to alcohol counseling. He moves that she be charged with misdemeanor reckless driving, pay a fine, and go on probation for a year, and the judge immediately agrees. And Allison's very relieved, but Zach seems to have taken the wrong lesson from this whole escapade. Clip 7.
You did it, babe. You beat the system.
Yikes.
She's a white woman.
Right.
She is the system. I don't think she gets to beat it.
True.
Except for the front fender.
I haven't looked ahead to see if this kid's family like sues her for his medical expenses because they still could, but you know, we'll see. We probably won't.
Given that the writers can't seem to remember whether he was on a bike or ran out in the street, they say it's the latter. It was the former.
Yeah. Well, that's probably all we'll hear about him.
I hope this storyline does not continue.
On to the B plot. Jane should finally face the truth about Chris, but will she? Jane and Chris go to the studio to pull out the check for $5,000 for the expansion of her company, just as promised, because he's totally trustworthy. Oh, sorry. What did I say?
$5,000.
Oh, well, soon enough. Spoiler.
Comes up.
Now, this whole time, I thought when he was referring to, like, the company he worked for, that was also part of the con. Like, he was just stringing her along with all these promises and, like, he didn't actually work for anyone. But it turns out he did. This seems crazy. Like,
I mean, I don't think he will for long.
No, but this just seems like a long way to go to, spoiler, embezzle the money. You know?
Yeah.
Anyway. But whatever. The other
also,
funny thing
about Jane, but whatever.
That too. As you note in the visual aids, the funny thing about it is that this gigantic physical check came just in the mail, like with their other mail, with the catalogs, yeah, with their Val pack. Here it is.
With like the Elvis stamp on it. Okay. Sure.
Yeah. Even then, I mean, I think, you know, there were wire transfers, but
yeah.
So, also, by the way, she went to Chicago for Thanksgiving and came back the next day, just reminding everyone of the timeline. So, they celebrate her officially being a success. Clip 8.
And I would like to thank the Academy, my high school sewing teacher, and you.
Oh, enjoy it while you can.
Well, it's not like anyone else would even pretend they wanted to give her money, so sure. Maybe he's the one who should get an Academy Award. I'm just saying.
Brr. She also goes on to say something like, Donna Karen, look out, which, like, I really had forgotten what a big damn deal Donna Karen was in the 90s. God. Like,
huge, huge
such
deal.
A big deal. Really a crossover hit. She was Donna Martin's touchstone / the inspiration for Donna's design logo that she totally ripped off. The next night, Chris and Jane are on their way out to some fancy expensive restaurant to celebrate when they awkwardly run into Sydney and Jake in the courtyard. They each try to continue on their opposite paths, but Chris can't help being creepy in clip 9.
You'll be glad to know that Sydney and I have kissed and made up. And we did it just for you, Jake.
Who's that all about?
It's got me. He's always talking some mysterious crap, like you're supposed to know what it means.
Okay. Let's see how that works.
Yeah, I mean, that was like pretty classic soap opera suspicious response. Mm-hmm. But as in all soap operas, the her scene partner does not notice her acting totally shifty. So,
nope. At the studio the next day, Jane calls Chris to check on the dinner plans she thought they had. But never mind, with this new infusion of cash, they can get started on a whole new line. It's so exciting. But Chris is, in fact, at the complex, leaving a jewelry box on Sydney's doorstep and creeping her out, as is his wont. And he makes her open the box while he stands there. It is earrings, which are, I guess, supposed to be expensive, but they sure look like glass. You can see them in the visual aids. She thinks they are ugly, or so she says, and refuses to accept them. And tries to stomp off, but he reminds her that she can't afford to offend him or Jake might get hurt. And he puts the box in her hand and says this, clip 10.
Think about keeping them. You never know when you'll have occasion to wear them.
If I do, it'll just be so that I can sell them and give the money to someone needy.
Oh, really? And here I thought that all your charity was given from the waist down.
Take a day off, guy.
Oh, really?
Like,
we get it, Snidely.
She also gets it.
Yeah.
Really. She's.
Why don't you spend the time you'll save at the barber because your hair is out of control?
It's so
He's
tall.
Starting to look like Ted Cruz. It's not good.
So she's, you know, performs disgust, but as soon as he's gone, she does take one earring out of the box and hold it up to her ear in front of the mirror. So he is getting to her. The next day, Jane's being hauled in to talk to her bank manager. She's pissed at him after fielding 3 calls from vendors telling her she bounced checks on them. But the manager has to tell her it's going to be a lot more than that. She says that's impossible because her associate, Chris, just deposited a $500,000 check in that account. Except, no, the account has $0 in it because Chris didn't deposit that check. He cashed it. Bum-bum.
Oh, sorry, Simpy.
Oh, could have seen this coming. And what is Chris doing now? Well, he's having the driver of the limo he's in pull over to the side of the road so he can yank Sydney into the back with him. Ultimate arm grab, frankly. He sees yeah. that she's wearing those earrings that he gave her and says he knew that she would warm up to them. And that night, Jake goes over to Jane's. She is wearing that one breast cancer awareness t-shirt that was everywhere for a while.
Mm-hmm.
The CFDA Fashion Targets breast cancer shirt. You can see it in the visual aids. The target with the blue and the black rings. She's obviously in no mood, but he wants to know if she has seen Sydney. And all at once, Jane puts something together, but not quite the right way. Clip 11.
Don't you get it, Jake? We've been had. The two of us by the two of them.
What the hell are you talking about?
Chris and Sydney are gone. And so is $500,000.
True, but...
Yeah.
Yes, but no.
Mm, yeah, I mean, classic Jane.
Mm-hmm.
To be like, you know, boo-hoo, I've been so hard done by, but then not quite have the math right on
yeah.
the... how she's been screwed over. Like, oh, Jane.
Yeah. Like, Sydney's gone. My money's gone. Am I going to remember all those times Sydney told me that Chris was hitting on her and being a creep and sketchy as hell? No, no, not at
no.
all.
No.
Finally, our A plot. And what an A plot.
Oh, boy.
Kimberly's plan was not as selfless as Joe thought. Again.
What?
Who could have seen this coming also as well, too?
Oh, my God. So many simps.
So.
Dawning comprehension. Oh.
See all of their too late horror, the visual aids.
So much. So late.
It's really very, very late. At the hospital, Kimberly pulls a curtain around the bed of a Mrs. Cortez to express her condolences about Mrs. Cortez's baby, who is scheduled to be delivered stillborn the next day. Mrs. Cortez, sadly, is Vanessa Marquez. You may have known her as Nurse Wendy on ER. She was also in a very memorable episode of Intervention. She has since passed away. We miss her. That intervention was really a legendary one. She had a shopping addiction.
It really was. And then she was overshadowed, unfortunately, by Gabe.
Oh, Gabe.
Worst. Person.
When the last time I checked for it, it was not online. He was the he was the rapping math teacher. Oh my God. Anyway. Heartbroken, Mrs. Cortez cries about her horrible ordeal, which, I mean, who can possibly imagine? Truly horrible, not hyperbole. And Kimberly performs empathy as she says Mrs. Cortez will be in her thoughts. And then we see Kimberly at Joe's place telling her about this very lucky coincidence. Yikes. Joe has various logistical qualms about delivering 2 weeks early and what they'll tell people. But Kimberly reminds Joe that the Carters are waiting to take custody whenever Joe delivers. So she kind of has no choice. And Joe sadly mumbles that she guesses she doesn't. So they're on. Kimberly's going to induce labor at the beach house. Michael, as we said, conveniently going to be away all weekend. And she'll check Joe into the hospital immediately afterward. They'll keep the baby at Kimberly's house until Joe is discharged from the hospital and then can come and pick it up. And then Joe will disappear. Joe guesses she needs to make the necessary arrangements to go on the lam forever. Like, it's kind of a lot, but yes. And when Kimberly is left, Joe calls to book a one-way ticket to New York, making sure to add that she'll be traveling with an infant. No, bitch, you drive. Bad start for your life. Off the grid, dummy.
Yeah, I was thinking it.
Anyway, then Joe and Kimberly are walking through the courtyard with a picnic basket just in time for Jake to come out of his apartment, see them together, and witness them going to Santa Barbara for the day. Even Jake is like, really? Because he didn't think they were friends, because they're not. And Kimberly brightly says Joe has been stressed out. Kimberly's going to help her relax. Doctor's orders. So Jake just congratulates the doctor on getting Joe the workaholic to take a day off. And mission accomplished in terms of establishing an alibi. And at the beach house, Joe worries on the bed while Kimberly and this Maria, who Kimberly just says has been with Kimberly for a long time, attend her. Unclear if Maria is a nurse or a midwife or just some lady, as the episode goes on, seems like the last of those. Joe doesn't seem very reassured. Kimberly's going to give her an injection and contractions will start. And then she says labor could last anywhere from 4 to 36 hours. Like, that's a really very long span of time, potentially. I mean,
also,
I know,
the expectant mother bought all the books and knows that. Like, why are you telling us?
Yeah.
It's whatever.
Right. I mean, I don't know if they're supposed to be trying to tell us, like, induced labor is different from regular labor.
Don't try this at home,
right,
kids?
I suppose. So Joe starts worrying, too late, frankly, about whether they shouldn't be in a hospital. But Kimberly says she's delivered dozens of babies and everything will be fine. Joe just needs to relax and remember why she's doing it this way. And then the camera focuses in on the needle in the foreground. So, got it. Scary. And when we meet back up with them, it's just in time for Joe to do her final push and deliver a boy. Kimberly only lets Joe hold him for, I timed it, 18 seconds before taking him back and saying they have to clean him up and check him into the hospital, which, as we said earlier, let's chalk it up to there not being time for Marcia Cross to run that line again, because this baby is supposed to be dead. Whatever. Cut to the hospital, where Kimberly logs into the computer system and just changes the name Cortez to Reynolds to show a stillborn baby. And much as we did with Michael's blood alcohol, I have to note, a hospital computer system, even back then, A, would not just let you do this, and B, would track changes like this and who made them.
Mm-hmm.
They are records. It's not just an Excel spreadsheet, but whatever. Then Kimberly's in the hallway telling Jane, Jake, and Amanda how Joe's pregnancy loss happened, allegedly. Kimberly delivered the baby in the back seat, but it was stillborn. They can go in and see her briefly. And then we don't even see how good or bad Joe is at selling this story, which I was annoyed by. Like, that's a key part of the storyline, in my opinion, is like whether they would be convinced by her.
Right.
But we never find out. I guess they were. So then Kimberly comes back to the house that night to Maria cradling the baby as the sun sets and sends her home. The baby starts to cry, and when Kimberly surmises that he's hungry, she gets a crazy look in her eye and says they'll just have to feed him, and then unbuttons her shirt and puts her breast in his mouth, and it's not clear if it works for him, but it definitely works for her. Lady.
Okay, so I think this was at the point where we were watching it. Oh, no, I guess that was later. But I John Ramos and I basically converted this bar on the east side of Manhattan to watch it to Melrose Mondays. Like, it was this like businessman publishing guy bar.
Yes.
And we asked them to put Melrose on and they did it.
Love it.
And then other dudes in the bar start coming back to watch it. And then they started putting food out. Like, it was a whole thing. The Black Fin, I love you.
Mm-hmm.
You live on in our hearts. Although I think it actually burned down, but they moved it.
Oh.
Anyway, I definitely feel like, you know, it was like us and our friend Jill and then a row of like 40 something dudes waiting for the late train and eating Melrose wings. And they show this and one of them just breathes, "That is fucked up." But I think this aired too early. I think I'm just remembering something else that they thought was fucked up, because mm-hmm. that would have been, this aired in end of 94, right?
This would be like early, this would be like springish. Oh no, this was right after Thanksgiving. So this is, yeah, this is before Christmas 94.
Right. Okay. So yeah, I'm thinking of something else, but every time something that they might have said that about happens, I always remember that guy with his tie sort of like tucked into his shirt while he's eating snacks, being like, "That was fucked up." Like, yeah, yes, sir, it was. That's how we converted you to the magic of this show.
Love it. That's great. So the next day, Williams, the Carter's lawyer, is in Joe's hospital room interrogating Kimberly. Not present, surprising no one, Joe's lawyer. probably at his disbarment hearing. Anyway, here's how this Seriously. Conversation goes. Clip 12.
You went for a drive to Santa Barbara and Miss Reynolds went into labor.
Mm-hmm.
And based on your professional experience, you thought that you could make it back to Los Angeles in time to deliver the child at this hospital, which was Miss Reynolds' desire.
That's right. But later I realized I couldn't make it, so I had to pull over and deliver the child myself. The child was stillborn. There's nothing I could do.
Okay. And after delivering the child, you drove back to this hospital, checked in Miss Reynolds, and personally brought the deceased infant to the morgue.
That's correct.
Miss Reynolds, do you corroborate her statement?
Yes, entirely.
I will be confirming all of this against the hospital's records.
That's certainly your prerogative, but I'm sure you'll see that everything's in order.
Yeah, you might find it odd that no attempt was made in the emergency room to revive the deceased infant.
Mm-hmm.
You also might maybe want to question them separately next time before
mm-hmm.
asking her if she corroborates that. What's she going to say? Like, actually, no, what happened was, come on, guy, is it your first day?
Right. I mean, this is, if you suspect foul play, you also like maybe make this a criminal matter. Like, I don't know how this shit works, but this
seems strange. I don't either, but
strange.
Yeah. And neither does Joe, spoiler.
Right. And neither does her absent lawyer. So then Williams turns to Joe to say his clients want to pay for the funeral service and burial, but Joe hoarsely says she wants the baby cremated, and apparently that is a right she can assert even though she lost legal custody of it, I guess. But it works on that guy and he backs down. She also wants no further contact with the Carters ever, which is probably even more fine since she no longer has anything they want. And Williams leaves and Kimberly and Joe celebrate in clip 13.
Oh, Kimberly, I don't know if I'll ever be able to repay you.
No, you don't have to worry about that, Joe. Not for 1 minute.
She sure won't.
Nope.
So that night or whenever, Joe goes by the beach house to pick up her baby and get on the plane like a dumbass. But she can immediately tell things are amiss when Kimberly opens the door with the chain on, cradling the baby and acting weird. And they have this exchange in our final clip.
What do you want?
I came to get my baby like we planned.
Oh, you poor thing. You must be suffering from postpartum depression. I'd be happy to prescribe some antidepressants for you tomorrow. During business hours, of course.
Kimberly, you know damn well I'm perfectly fine. Now give me my baby.
Joe, your baby's dead. And I've got the death certificate to prove it. You signed it.
Kimberly! 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 Open up!
Whoops.
She's stealing your baby is what?
I mean, she's not doing it. She done did it.
Yeah.
It's done. So you should have really thought this through.
And you're an accessory in the kidnapping of your own kid.
Yeah.
Good job, girl.
I guess that's true. Crazy.
It's fucked up. That is fucked up. Yeah. Yikes.
Well, let us close things up by naming our episode MVP. Truly Andrew Hsu for that one scene where he did all the acting and really impressed me for once this season.
I'm going to say Courtney Thorne Smith again. Mm-hmm. She's making it three dimensions, which is not necessary and probably a fool's errand, but I appreciate the effort.
She is. Least valuable player. Kimberly, this is a very bad plot. Really, really evil. bad karma.
I mean, it's super evil, but she did it. Like, I can't make her the least valuable player. She pulled it off. Gotta say Jane. You fucking bonehead. Fair. Like, I don't know, maybe call the bank and make sure the shit cleared before you start writing a bunch of checks, professor. I hate Jane a lot.
Yeah, that's also a fair choice. I mean, we really were spoiled for options in this one. A lot
it's
of
true. I mean, assets. Technically, yes, Kimberly and Chris.
Mm-hmm. And Joe, take care of your own baby. Don't do this shit.
Yeah, really. Get a new lawyer and, appeal something. We appeal to you to listen to again with this. Next time, Sydney gets kidnapped, Joe gets arrested, Bruce gets ousted, and Allison gets help? Your retinas are going to need some help when they're sizzling in front of our visual aids, which you can find at our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's also where you can find links to our very special 90210 book with excellent visual aids of its own by Julie Kane. So browse on over there today. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 and join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra content. I'm MacGuffin Corp Short Squeeze Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Sobriety Test Proctor, Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Geneva Fonted Death Certificate, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time. Ooh.
What?
Never truer.